Last week, I finished a little statement from Voices of Men, the voice of men. And that was from Song of Solomon, Song of Songs from 4, chapter 4, verses 1 through 15. And in this passage, I won't read it all again, but in this passage, here's what we saw. We saw he's talking about how beautiful you are. And then he talks about her eyes. He talks about her hair. He talks about her teeth. He talks about her mouth. He talks about her temples. He talks about her neck. He refers about that. He talks about her breasts. He talks about, again, how beautiful she is, that she has no blemish. I guess that's talking about her skin. He talks about how she has made his heart beat faster. She talks about the fragrance of her oils, the skin oils. And in other words, he likes the smell of her body, the smell that comes out of their pores. You know, people have different smells. And you can either like that or not like that in the person that you love, okay? The fragrance comes out as better than all kinds of spices, he said. He talks about her lips. Your lips, my bride, drip honey. Honey and milk are under your tongue. He talks about that. In other words, he talks about all these various things of her completely, and they're all praiseworthy of things, you know, of the, at that time, the pastoral bucolic area of life. It's what early Israelites thought were beautiful. Now, you don't think that's beautiful today. You might say, well, her hair is like a flock of goats, you know, get her to the beauty shop. No. But he has a wonderful praise. These are all praiseworthy things. Now, I want to bring up some things that science today has shown us. Women have a larger portion of their brain devoted to hearing. That's why they hear better. They can hear, you know, you think a woman can't hear, she can hear you. You walk away and say a bad thing about a woman, she'll hear it. Okay? So they have larger, and then they also have a larger portion of their brain devoted to emotion, okay? So here's what you think when you say nice things about a woman, this is going to really enhance her? Absolutely. These things are very, very seductive, wanting this woman to have good romance with you and everything. You're telling her, you know, all about herself. And she's going to appreciate this. Now, you know, this is Hebrew poetry, right? You don't take the poetry 100% as factual, okay? It's Hebrew poetry, and it's what we call purr words. S.I. Hayakawa wrote a book years ago called Language in Thought and Action. I love that book. I recommend it to all the ministers when I taught pastoral care and counseling. I did it. I recommended that book because it showed you how to think straight understand the semantics of words, semantics, okay? And one of the things Hayakawa talked about was, now Hayakawa was Samuel Hayakawa that was our senator. I don't think he was a great senator, but he's definitely a great linguist, and he wrote a wonderful book called Language and Thought and Action, and he talks about purr words, purr, you know, they're very purring, you know, and growl words, angry words, you know. Now, you don't take those literally, purr words. I wouldn't, if I said to my wife, you're the most beautiful woman in the world, she wouldn't say, okay, he said I am, and I'm the most beautiful woman. I'm gonna go into the Miss Universe contest. I'm bound to win because he said I was the most beautiful woman. No, you don't take those words literally. You don't take these words literally from the Song of Songs. It doesn't mean this woman is the most beautiful woman in all the world. There's another passage we'll talk about in a moment. But I just want to let you know that the woman's brain's going to hear this. Here's what you do not ever want to do. You never want to say harsh, ugly, bad, nasty, condemning things to a woman. Never, never harsh and ugly, never. Because she will hear it and she will have an emotion to it, okay? And that is just that's just unbelievable. You never want to do that because of the larger portion for hearing and the larger portion for emotions. You will hardly ever get over that, okay? So that's why Paul, when he's writing, husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Now, you could tell a woman, hey, look, I didn't appreciate that, honey. I, the way you said that, I was not nice for you to do that with me or do that. I didn't appreciate that you would spend that kind of money without asking me. You could say that, but you don't call her names. You never say you're this or you're that or other words that begin with a B or a C or a D or whatever it is or a W or anything else. You never say those words, okay? Never. Because it has a terrible effect on her mind, okay? So these are poetic words. They're not to be taken literally, but they are poetic because they're expressing one person's love and completely in love. Now, there's a first stage of romance. It has to be attraction. You're never going to find a love and marry somebody you're not attracted to in any way. It has to be some form of attraction, some form. I don't know what form it is, their personality, their looks, their body, their mind, the words they say, the way they walk, the way they talk, the way they listen, the way the kindness. I asked one woman who married my first cousin, who was my my dad's sister's son, the youngest of the sister's sons. She had 15 kids, and they were the youngest, and they're my age, can you believe? And that's her youngest. And she, I asked his wife, what did you find attractive in Ron? What attracted you to my cousin Ronnie? We used to call him Ronnie all the time. And she said, his kindness. He was such a kind, he is still one of the kindest, sweetest guys you ever meet, but brilliant. He wrote his own math book. He taught math at the University of Dayton in Ohio. After he was spent 3 or 4 years in the service flying jet planes during the Korean War. So again, kindness. What was attractive to her? His kindness. You have to have some form of attraction. And you'll see here this, the way they talk. Now, here's another statement from a man. A man is talking here in Song of Songs, chapter 6, beginning in verse 1. I'll read from the first 10 verses here. Where has your beloved gone? Oh, most beautiful among women. Now, somebody's asking this question, okay? We don't know who that was. Where is your beloved? Where has your beloved turned that we may seek him with you? We'll go out. Now, maybe these are the daughters of Jerusalem. We don't know who these are, but they're talking to this woman and saying, well, where's your beloved? We'll go with you, find him. And here's, she says, now this is the woman, my beloved has gone down to his garden, to the beds of balsam, to pasture his flock in the gardens and gather lilies. He's gone down there. Then she says, I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. He who pastures his flock among the lilies, you are as beautiful as Tisra, my darling. Now, this is him. As lovely as Jerusalem. As awesome as an army with banners. So there's something, you know, like a big parade. Turn your eyes away from me, for they have confused me. Now, he's talking to her now. She's flashing her eyes. Your hair is like a flock of goats that have descended from Gilead. That seemed to be beautiful back then. Now, if you said that today, she'd say, well, give me a brush or a mirror. Let me see what's going on here. Then again, in verse six, he says, your teeth are like a flock of ewes which have come up from the washing. Again, that was another parallel. All of which bear twins. In other words, this tooth, they all bear twins. And not one among them has lost her young. Your temples are like a slice of pomegranate beside your veil. There are 60 queens and 80 concubines, all maidens without number. But my dove, he's calling her his dove, my perfect one is unique. And again, this is, you know, poetry, just beautifully. You don't take poetry literally, you know, it's an expression of emotion, of feelings. This is my perfect one. When you're in love with a woman or whether you're in love with a man, and you don't say, you know, you're that's like your perfect one. There are others, but I want this one. She is her mother's only daughter. She is the pure child, the pure one of the one who bore her. She's the pure of the one who bore her. I remember when I first married Molly, I used to tell her mother, I think I got the pick of the litter. I think I got the pick of the litter. She says, you know, I think you did too. I wonder if she told that to each one of her son-in-laws if they said the same thing. It's a good statement. It's a good statement for her to agree with me. So here it is. She is her mother's only daughter. She is the pure one of the one who bore her. The maidens saw her and called her blessed. The queens and the concubines also, and they praised her, saying, who is this that grows like the dawn, as beautiful as the full moon? You know, little by little, she's growing. It's coming. She develops. She's more beautiful all the time. As pure as the sun, as awesome as an army with banners. That's chapter 6, verses 1 through 10. So men voices again. Men say it again. These are just beautiful words. And they're, again, purr words. They're purr words. They're words of praise, words of feeling. So here it is in the Song of Songs, which meant when you say Song of Songs, you're saying this is the greatest of all poetry songs. And by the way, this is the most beautiful poetry in the Bible. There is nothing. It's frank. It's straightforward. It's sincere. And even though it's poetic, it's expressing a very sincere and caring, loving feelings toward the beloved. You know, you have to have some form of a attraction, as I say. And the next part of your progression of your relationship, the next part of your relationship goes from attraction to appreciation. That's the most exciting part of any relationship, the attraction and appreciation. And you appreciate everything they do. Oh, he remembered my birthday. He sent me a birthday card. It's so wonderful. He's so sweet. He's so wonderful. Oh, she's so sweet. She sent me this. She bought me that because she knew I liked that. And, oh, she was so sweet. You just appreciate everything they do, okay? Chapter 7, Men's Voices Again. How beautiful are your feet in sandals. He sees them. They got, you know, you have sandal straps and everything. And he looks at her feet. Her feet are beautiful. How beautiful are your feet? This is verse 1 of chapter 7. How beautiful are your feet in sandals, O princess daughter? You're the daughter of a prince. Okay. The curves of your hips are like jewels, the work of the hands of an artist. He's looking at her body, and the curves of your hips are like, wow. They look like somebody carved them out. They're beautiful, like jewels, okay, like diamonds. Okay, you could say jewels, diamonds, whatever you want. The curves of your hips. He's noticing her feet, her hips, okay? Your navel is like a round goblet which never lacks mixed wine. It's always something good there. There's always something good. Your belly is like a heap of wheat fenced about with lilies. Okay, that's your abdomen. Now, I know in today, so many women want a wash, you know, you'll see these athletic women, they want a washboard stomach, a washboard, you know, showing the six pack or whatever they call it. That is not what most men love. Most men want a little bit of a tummy, a little bit. Okay, because at least that's what I like, a little bit of a tummy. You know, you don't want a big, you know, giant tummy. You don't want somebody who's too fat, you know. But you want somebody that's doesn't have a washboard stomach, a heap of wheat fenced about with lilies. Your two breasts. Now, he's looking at her body. He's appreciating everything about that body. Everything. And it is true that women, I think girls, I had a girl as a client. She was a little chubby. She wasn't maybe all that attractive in her body. And she was telling me that she was sitting there and she watched, she said, when in class, and when certain girls would get up, this one girl had a really good figure and everything, she would get up. She said, I would watch the boys and they would watch her walk all the way over to the pencil sharpener pencil, and then walk all the way back to to her seat. And I said, what did you think? What was going through your mind? She said, I was wishing they would watch me. I was wishing they were looking at me. So she wanted that. But she noticed boys. She saw that when the girl got up, all the boys, their eyes went following every step that girl made and all the way back to her seat. Yes. The women, as a woman develops, she develops this body that is sensuous, that is attractive. And when a man falls in love with her, listen to what he says. Your navel is like the round goblet, which never lacks wine. Your hips are like jewels, the work of an artist. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of the gazelle. Your neck, now this is Song of Solomon, Song of Songs, in chapter 7, verse 4. Your neck is like a tower of ivory. Okay, tower of ivory. Strong. Beautiful, smooth, luscious. Not doesn't have anything to do with the color, because they're not talking here of color. They're talking just how beautiful and smooth it was. Your eyes like pools of Heshbon by the gate of the Bath Rabin, like Bath Rabin. Your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon. Now, if you said that to a woman today, your nose is like a Tower of Lebanon. Why are you insulting me? You think I have a big nose? I have too big a nose and all that? There's an old humorous little story. These guys were trying to get this one guy to try to help him to talk to women in a way, nice way, to give them a compliment. And so he's supposed to be giving women compliments. So they ask him, you know, well, you're taking your girlfriend out and everything. Did you give her a compliment? Oh, yeah, I did. But you said she's not wanting to see you anymore. And did you give her a compliment? Yes, I gave her a compliment. Well, what did you say? I told her, for a fat girl, you don't sweat much. So that's supposed to be humorous. But anyhow, for a fat girl, you don't sweat much. So that was his compliment. She said, I don't want to see you anymore. Well, I can understand. Your neck is like a tower of ivory. Your eyes like the pools of Heshbon at the gate. Your nose is like the tower of Lebanon, meaning it's a beautiful, what Napoleon said about his generals? If the two men were equally qualified to go and do this in his general, he would pick the one with the biggest nose. Okay, that's how his thought. I don't know what that means. So if the nose means strength, drive, power, whatever. Okay, so your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon, which faces toward Damascus. No, now they're going north. You're like this. It's like you've got some kind of drive. You're more than just looking around here. You look far out into the future. Your head crowns you like Carmel, and the flowing locks of your head, now her hair, are like the purple threads. The king is captivated by your tresses, your hair, your way. How beautiful and how delightful you are. You know, when I was married to Molly, I would never say she didn't look good. You know, that you look terrible in that dress. Don't buy that dress. You look awful. You never would say that. You just say that doesn't make you look as beautiful as you could be, or something like that. I would never tell my wife she doesn't look good under any circumstances. You don't say that. So because if you love her, in your mind, she always looks good. In every position, every way, she always looks good. So here he goes. You're beautiful. How beautiful and delightful you are, my love. He calls her his love. And with all your charms, that's her personality, her way of saying things, or the way that she looks, or smile, or, you know, because our personalities are our charms. Or your stature. Now he not only looks at these various parts of her, you know, he's looked at her feet, he looked at the curves of her hips, he's looked at her breasts, he's looked at her neck and so on, and now her nose, her breasts. Your stature is like a palm tree. She stands straight up. She stands good. Okay, stature is like a palm tree, and your breasts are like its clusters. I said, I will climb the palm tree. I will take hold of its fruit stalks. Oh, may your breasts be like clusters of the vine, and your fragrance and the fragrance of your breath like apples. You know, it's going to smell good. You're just going to be so beautiful. In those days, they didn't eat highly processed, overly processed food that makes your breath smell bad and your body odor smell bad and all the things, because you're loading your body with garbage, okay, which is garbage. How does garbage smell? It smells bad. And don't load your body with garbage, okay? A lot of people don't, you know, they just eat all this garbage. I said, I will climb the palm trees. I will take hold of its fruit stalks. Oh, may your breasts be like clusters of the vine, and the fragrance of your breath like apples, and your mouth like the best wine. I want to drink from that. You know, I want to drink. It goes down smoothly for my beloved, flowing gently through the lips of those who fall asleep. That's the man, okay? So this book, as we told you before, is not the book of Song of Solomon, or the Song of Songs, is not completely unified Okay. It's not a complete, you know, it's something here, it's something there. That's why people have a hard time. And we don't, there are different songs in here, different songs. Some think there are only just a few songs. Some think there are up to 30 different various songs sung, you know, like a play in some cases. There are disputes among the rabbis as to whether the book should have been, as I mentioned before, I think that whether the book should have been a part of the canon. It's part of what we call the Bible, okay? It's part of the Bible. And why? We're going to see, what is the, why would God include something so starkly stated, so absolutely stated of love? Now, they had to make it into an allegory. This is Yahweh's love, the Eternal's love for Israel. The Christians say this is God, Christ's love for the church. And you can make it an allegory. You can make it into anything you want because it just is there. Now, one of the rabbis, about 135 into the CE, or, you know, we call it, Christians like to say AD, you know, which would mean in the year of our Lord, but into the common era, one of the rabbis said that the song was given to Israel because all scriptures are holy. When this rabbi said, all scriptures are holy, but the Song of Songs is the holy of holies. It's so important. So rabbis preserved the sanctity of this song. Of course, they would use it as an allegory. And one rabbi said this about the Song of Songs. If anyone gets up to sing the Song of Songs in a kind of a banquet house or a saloon or a nightclub or anything like that, if you got up to sing the Song of Songs, that he said, and you made it into a profane song, a profane, you're taking it out of its beauty, out of its gorgeous setting, you make it into a profane song, they said that person would not share in the world to come. That is the kingdom of God. That person would not share in God's kingdom. Now, the book has, again, we said, many similes. Similes is like, your neck is like, your body is like, your breasts are like, your feet are like, okay? And has many similes, like the Rose of Sharon, the Lily of the Valley, Lily among the Brambles, like a dove, you know, a description of women like a dove. And in the Christian tradition, we see it as an allegory between Christ and the church. The connection with Solomon, however, why is it called the Song of Solomon? It's because he's mentioned so many times. He's mentioned six times in this book. He's mentioned in chapter 1, verse 5, chapter 3, verse 7, verse 9, verse 11, chapter 8, verses 11 and 12. And not only is he mentioned by name, Solomon, but he's also mentioned as the king. It does not have his name. It just mentions the king. In chapter 1, verse 4, in chapter 1, verse 12, No, I'm sorry, chapter 1, verse 4, and then chapter 12, verses 7, and I believe verse 5. Chapter 1, I think it's verse 4 and 12, and chapter 7, verse 5, talks about the king. Many different opinions regarding when this book was written. And because of the word translated orchard in the New American Standard Version here, many different opinions about the date. People argue over the date. We do not know when this book was really written, okay? There's no absolute date. So people argue all the time about it. Because of the appearance of a Persian word, which is pardes, P-A-R-D-E-S, it means garden or orchard. And in the New American Standard Version, it says, your shoots are an orchard, a pardes, paradise, a garden of pomegranates. Your shoots are an orchard of pomegranates with choice fruits, henna and palm and hard palms. That's in chapter 4, verse 13. You'll see the word pardes. Pardes is a Persian word. Where did they get a Persian word in ancient Israel? They didn't until they were exiled. You remember how the exile went? Babylon came in, took them into exile, and they went into Babylon, and they changed their names. You remember they changed the names of the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They changed them. They were Daniel. You know, they were Hananiah, Azrael, and so on. They were all these other names. They were Hebrew names changed into Babylonian names, and changed Daniel's name to Belteshazzar. And he was Belshazzar, and he was called, they wanted to change their names into Babylonian names. And then Babylon was captured by Persia. So many of these people, the Israelites, went from Babylon, and now Persia took it over, and they were under the Persian rule. And this word pardes is a Persian word. It has some of the most beautiful poetry in all the Bible. It is just beautifully done, the statements. But we know that there are changes of speakers. It's hard for people to, you know, who's speaking now, who's speaking now. For instance, a woman is speaking to her lover directly, and sometimes she is speaking to the daughters of Jerusalem. She's saying something to the daughters of Jerusalem, and they're trying to have her come with them. She's lost. She's now looking for her lover, okay? And the daughters of Jerusalem respond. Now, in chapter 2, verse 1, she's saying, I am the rose of Sharon. Okay, that's a metaphor, okay? The lily of the valleys. Like a lily among the thorns, so is my darling among the maidens. Now, the man is saying this. My darling among the maidens. She's like a lily, a beautiful flower, a lily flower, among brambles. The rest are like brambles, thorns, ugly, scratchy, not right. Okay? So there's a lot more here in the Song of Solomon. I want to come to a major conclusion in this song, because this is a song about love. This is a song that exalts love between a man and a woman. And isn't this what God meant when the Bible says, and he created man, male and female, he created them. There's nothing superior from one to the other. They need each other. They're attracted to each other. And I think this is true. Many psychologists feel this way. And I think it's true. There's always a tension. There's a sexual tension. That doesn't mean you're going to be doing something with each other, but there's a sexual tension between men and women. Doesn't matter. Could be your sister, could be your mother, could be your grandmother, could be some other person, a friend, a good friend, you know, just some. There's sexual tension because of the way we're made. And God put that in us, and you have to control it. You have to, you know, nobody's going to do anything with their sister, brother, you know, cousin, son, daughter, children, grandchildren. You don't do that. There's a sexual tension, though, and you know it, and they know it. Everybody feels it. All right, join me next week for the conclusion of the Song of Songs, and I think you'll be surprised. I think you'll be benefited, and I think you'll be enhanced in your own relationships with the opposite sex. Next week. Join me now as we end this service with prayer and praying for our many brothers. Father in heaven, we thank you for your wonderful kindness, We thank you for everything every day. We thank you that you have made us male and female. Without being male, males cannot appreciate females unless they're males. And women cannot appreciate males unless they're females. And that's how we learn to appreciate one another and admire and respect one another. We give you thanks now, Father, that for all your blessings. We ask you to hear our prayers for those suffering, for those bereaved, for those who are struggling for strength, for those who are struggling against pain and suffering. We just ask, Father, that you will hear our prayers for them, and we give you thanks that you are merciful and that we have a merciful high priest. We don't know why there are not many miracles and just the people just having one. Everybody can perform a miracle or something like that. We just don't see that in today's world, but we do thank you, Father, that you have provided many, many good things from health things and knowledge of good foods and knowledge of good things to a wonderful ability for we have surgeons and others to back us up and help us with things where we hurt, as my son has and with Mariana LeBrier has repaired and completely benefited from the many wonderful blessings and advances of medical science. So thank you for all these things. Thank you that we're all debtors. We're all debtors to somebody else, to the researchers, to the people who study the Hebrew, the Greek, to the people who learned how to scan through the electron microscopes to teach us more about our bodies and ourselves. Thank you for all that. And we bless your holy name as we praise you, because it's to your glory that you hide these things, and it's to man's glory that he discovers it, that we human beings discover these things, man or woman. And we praise your name, Father, thanking you for all things through Jesus our Lord.